Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour. The fight was Sunday night, June 29th, 2014, and I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and I invite you to hop on the boat with us and sail into an hour of inspiration, music, questions, and some clues that may point to some answers. However, if you're like me, you find the questions much more interesting than the answers. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight, and I have some good news and some bad news. I'll give you the bad news first. The bad news is that Mimi Gurman of Radcast won't be with us tonight. I was very excited about having Mimi back on the show again, but she had to go back east and deal with a family emergency this week. So she had to cancel for tonight, but I'm hoping to have her on the show sometime in August. That's part of the good news. And I've got more good news, which is that next Sunday night, we're going to have a very special show focusing on the topic of what you're not being told about your food. And we're going to have Michael Brownlee with us as a guest. Michael is a dear friend and neighbor here in Boulder, Colorado, and directs Boulder's local food shift. He has some very scary but also some very, very important information to give us on the topic next Sunday night, as well as some really useful guidance. Michael is an expert on local food in the United States, and I think you're going to want to hear what he has to say. Tonight we have no guest, which once in a while is a good thing because then I get to talk with you, take some calls from you, play some music, and touch base in a sense as we go forward with the Lifeboat Hour. I don't know about you, but I'm having a great time doing this show, and I'm so pleased with the amazing guests we've been having in recent weeks. And let me assure you that we have a lot more on the way in the coming weeks. But tonight we're going to do something different. And I don't know if Mike ever did a show quite like this, but here's what we're going to do tonight. This show exists because, like so many shows on Progressive Radio Network, it is desperately needed. Our species, as you know, is first and foremost facing near-term extinction as it manages to make at least 200 other species a day go extinct. That's every day. May was the hottest month in recorded history. Take a moment and let that sink in. And a story this week on several websites reported that the planet's oceans are on the brink of collapse as a result of irreparable damage from climate change and overfishing. That's not to mention islands of plastic and other debris in the ocean. So, in addition to all of that, we have thousands of gallons of radiated water that are still getting dumped into the Pacific Ocean every day from Fukushima. Another story widely reported this week is that if climate change continues unabated, and we know it will, by the year 2100, it will be lethal to go outside for even a few minutes. Forget about working in the garden or taking your 5-mile-a-day run. In fact, forget about having a garden. And then we've got an exploding powder keg in the Middle East and another one in eastern Ukraine. The Dow nearly hit 17,000 this week as the other end of the economic continuum, the working poor and the middle class, live lives that are, as one CNN Money story described it this week, hungry, tired, and stressed out. And now thousands of people in Detroit have had their water shut off in the middle of summer. I could go on and on about what we're confronting in this time of extinction and economic wasting away, but tonight I want to do something different. Without minimizing any of these horrors, and they are horrors, I want to take some time to talk about how we can take care of ourselves physically, emotionally, and spiritually in the midst of them. After all, this is the Lifeboat Hour. But just because you get into a lifeboat, that doesn't mean you're going to survive, because we're all going to die. And if you didn't get the memo, life is fatal and no one gets out of here alive. But if there's a lifeboat around, it's really nice to have one and to get in the boat with some other people who are well aware of their fate. Some people who would like to maybe find a small island where they could stay for a while and help each other face the inevitable. And dare we say it, maybe even have a good time doing that. Now, one of the phrases that came to mind this week was living passionately in a time of extinction. That's the focus of our show tonight. And when we take callers later in the show, I'd like to hear from you how you are living passionately. What are you doing in the face of all that's happening and that is likely to happen to live your life passionately by expressing your creativity, expressing your love, increasing your service to humanity and other species, creating joy and beauty in the world? I'm not interested in comments like, I get high a lot, or I have sex a lot, or I just took a really cool vacation. What I'm interested in is feedback from people who are awake and aware of where we're headed, but in spite of that, or maybe even because of that, are intentionally, purposefully living their lives, expressing creativity and love and joy and beauty because they know where we're headed. I'm going to play a song as you think about that. This is a real gem by Holly Near called The Souls Are Coming Back. And I want you to hear what Holly says as she introduces the song, The Souls Are Coming Back. Let's take a listen.
Thanks, Tom. A cellist in Sarajevo went out into his square when the bombs were dropping and started playing his cello. And someone from the press said to him, "Why are you out here playing your cello while the bombs are dropping?" And he said, "Why are they dropping bombs while I'm playing the cello?" We need our creativity right now more than ever. Can you call on your imagination as if telling a myth to a child? Put in the fantastical, wonderful, magical, add the romantic, the brave and the wild. Once upon a time, there was a power so great that no one could know its name. People tried to change it and rule with it, but all with such arrogance ended in shame. Thousands of years would pass in a moment. Hundreds of cultures would come and go. Each generation with a glorious calling, even when they were too busy to know. And then one day after two millennia, which after all was a small part of time, hundreds of souls found their way out of nowhere to be on earth at the threat of decline. Let's all go, they moved as one being, even though each would arrive here alone. They promised to work in grace with each other to brave the beautiful planet called home. Now, there was no promise that they could save it, but how exciting to give it a try. If each one did just one thing beautifully, complex life on Earth life might not die. And so they arrived in a spectrum of colors. The population on Earth did explode. Some threw themselves in front of disaster, and others slowly carried their load. Some adopted small girls from China. Some lived high in the branches of trees. Some died as martyrs, some lived as healers, and some bravely walked with a dreadful disease. They mingled among each class and each culture. Not one of them could be identified, but together they altered just enough moments to help the lost and the terrified, to step outside of our egos and our bodies, to know for once that we truly are one. Then quickly we would forget to remember, but that's okay, their job was well done. And Earth went on for another millennium. Now it's time for the song to end. A magical story of hope and of wonder invites you all to wake up and pretend to be fabulous creatures sent from the power, souls that have come with one purpose in mind, to do one thing that will alter the outcome, and maybe together we can do it in time. Can you call on your imagination as if telling a myth to a child? Put in the fantastical, wonderful, magical, add the romantic, the brave and the wild. The souls are coming back, the souls are coming back, the souls are coming back.
And that was Holly Near singing The Souls Are Coming Back, and I'm Carolyn Baker with you here on the Lifeboat Hour. I love that beginning. Someone asks, why are you playing the cello in the middle of a war? And the musician answers, why are they having a war in the middle of my playing the cello? Now, we've been talking about lifeboats of creativity, service, joy, beauty, and the one I didn't mention is spirituality or spiritual practice. Maybe you have something you'd like to share about that when we take callers in a few minutes. So before I go any further, I want to let everyone know that 2 weeks from tonight, that's July 13th, Guy McPherson is going to be my guest, and we're going to talk about the new book we're writing together called Extinction Dialogues, Living with Death in Mind. This is a book of articles by both of us that culminates in a series of conversations between us. Guy is obviously bringing the latest climate science, and he's updating it constantly because it's changing so quickly. And I'm bringing the psycho-spiritual perspective of how we live and die well in the face of near-term extinction. Together, we're composing a work that integrates right and left brain, science and spirituality, life and death, despair and joy. So Guy and I will be talking about that 2 weeks from tonight right here on the Lifeboat Hour. Meanwhile, you can pre-order the book in two ways. You can go to the publisher's website at www.tayenlane, that's spelled TayenLane.com, TayenLane.com, or you can go to my website, CarolynBaker.net, and scroll down a bit to the announcement about the book. Click on the headline and pre-order there. So one of the things that Guy and I emphasize in the book and in our work is how important it is to surrender to the reality of near-term extinction. This week, someone sent me a link to a new film by Ian McKenzie, who lives in Vancouver, and who also produced the short films Occupy Love in 2013 and Sacred Economics in 2012. The new film is called The Making of Humans and features Stephen Jenkinson. Stephen is a teacher, an author, storyteller, spiritual activist, ceremonialist, and founder of the Orphan Wisdom School in Canada, a teaching and learning house for the skills of deep living and making human culture. It's a redemptive project that comes from where we come from. It's rooted in knowing history, being claimed by ancestry, and working for a time that we may not see. Some of you may have seen the YouTube video Grief Walker, which is about Stephen Jenkinson and his work with people around grief and dying. Here's a quote from Stephen that absolutely knocked my socks off. He says, "To see what you love dying and continue to love it when it's not going to last, that in itself is an act of love. That could be part of the story." Let me say that again. To see what you love dying and to continue to love it when it's not going to last, that in itself is an act of love. That could be part of the story. So when we open up to the reality of near-term extinction, that in itself is a great act of love. And you all know from listening to this show since I've been hosting it, that grief is an ongoing topic, as is the topic of hospice, because of where we are almost certainly headed. You could watch the trailer for the new movie, The Making of Humans, on YouTube, or you can visit the website of Ian McKenzie, which is IANMACK.com, IANMACK.com, which stands for Ian McKenzie. But if we only focus on extinction and death, we miss the other half of the story, which is life, joy, passion, beauty, creativity. And we're going to come back and talk about those right after a station break. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and tonight we're talking about living passionately in a time of extinction. We're going to open up the lines to callers in a while, but one of the ways that we can live passionately in this time of extinction is to fall in love with the earth. Most of us have never really fallen in love with the earth. In our heads, we honor and respect the earth. In our heads, we fight for causes that protect the earth. But many of us have never really, at a deeply cellular heart level, fallen in love with the earth. This week I read an article that shook me to the depths of my soul, but also inspired me beyond words. There's a wonderful book out there called Spiritual Ecology, The Cry of the Earth, which contains a number of essays by people such as Vandana Shiva, Orin Lyons, Winona LaDuke, Joanna Macy, and a woman I was not familiar with, Janine Marie Hogan, a wilderness guide and author who wrote an amazing essay for the Spiritual Ecology book called Imagining Earth. And in it she asks the question, what would we become if we honored the other than human world as if it matters to them and us? What would we become if we honored the other than human world as if it matters to them and to us? And I'd like to share a couple of things that Janine Marie Hogan says in this article. First, she says, if we approached rivers, mountains, dragonflies, redwoods, and reptiles as if all are alive, intelligent, suffused with soul, imagination, and purpose, what might the world become? Who would we become if we participated intentionally with such an animate earth? What if we apprehended that by nourishing the land and creatures with generous praise and gratitude, with our remembrance or tears, we rejuvenate our own relationship with the wild earth and possibly revitalize the soul of the world? And then she says, a little further into the article, we generally regard our bodies as ours, distinct from what is outside our skin, yet our bodies depend on air, water, sunlight, and food, which in turn depends on air, water, sunlight, and food. The elements of our bodies were born in a primeval supernova billions of years ago. Who can be sure where our bodies end or begin? Then she talks about what happens for her when she takes her flute and goes out and sits in front of a mountain and plays her flute to the mountain as if it were listening. in the process, she says that she becomes so bonded with the mountain that it's painful to separate from it. And commenting on that, she says, a practice of attending an animate world may have a cumulative effect of rearranging our own consciousness in a way that we cannot later withdraw from without pain. That's from Jeanine Marie Hogan, and it's from an article, Imagining Earth in Spiritual Ecology. Wonderful book, Spiritual Ecology. So back to what Stephen Jenkinson said, which I want to repeat. So when we open up to the reality of near-term extinction, that in itself is an act of great love. So at this time of extinction, surrendering to the extinction is a huge act of love. But we can do more than just surrender. As I said, we can fall in love with the earth for the first time or the second time or as many times as we like, because each time will be even more profound and meaningful in the light of near-term extinction. As many of you know, I use a great deal of poetry in my work, and yesterday I attended a gathering of a group that I facilitate here in Boulder where we had a belated celebration of the summer solstice. And everyone was asked to bring a poem or a ritual or a song or something to offer. And I brought Mary Oliver's amazing poem, Wild Geese. And I'd like to share the poem with you, even if you've heard it many, many times as I have, because I got some amazing new insights as I lived with this poem during the past week while I was memorizing it for the gathering. I think this poem is perfect for our time. She says, you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. That was Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. What's in front of us now is not the need to be good, to be obedient citizens or good ecologists or good anything. We don't have to walk on our knees through the desert repenting. And if you're walking around hating yourself and all of humanity because of what we've done to the planet, hear this. What really matters is you only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. If you are hating other humans, you cannot receive or give love. And then she says, tell me about despair, yours, and I'll tell you mine. Then very quickly she adds, meanwhile, the world goes on. We're all feeling despair. But nature goes on, and the earth goes on, and it will go on when we're not here. And then those incredible lines, meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Even as we are despairing about what is happening to the earth, it's doing what it does, and the geese are coming home again. Why is that important? Because if we turn to them, if we open to the amazing, phenomenal, wondrous process of nature, we can receive their precious gifts. And like the geese, we come home to something far greater than the rational mind and the human ego, which is our place in the family of things. Do you hear how in this poem Mary Oliver is holding the passion of life alongside despair? I bow to Mary Oliver and I bow to the wild geese. This is Carolyn Baker on the Lifeboat Hour, and now we're going to hear another song, and like this poem, the song is a holding of both incredible tension and uncertainty alongside joy, passionate, lively celebration. I'm a huge fan of Rodrigo and Gabriela, and this is their wonderful song, Tamakun. As you listen, please notice the brilliant way in which the music holds the tension of opposites, the opposites of joy and anxiety. Let's listen to Rodrigo and Gabriela with Tamakun. Rodrigo and Gabriela with Tamakun, and I've searched everywhere this week for the meaning of Tamakun, and I still haven't found it, but I don't need to know the meaning to enjoy the hell out of the song, and I do. I love all of their music. So now I'd like to open up the phones to callers, and our number here is 888-874-4888, and I'd like to hear from you how you live passionately in a time of extinction. I want to hear about your creativity, the ways in which you offer service to the world, the ways in which you create joy and beauty. And again, I'm not interested in whether or not you get high or how many times a week you have sex or your latest vacation. I just want to hear how you intentionally, and the key word here is intentionally, live your passion in a time of extinction. So please call us at 888-874-4888. And as we're waiting for callers, I'd like to read another poem, this one by D.H. Lawrence. I'm a huge fan of D.H. Lawrence, the English poet, who spent some time here in the United States. He spent some time in Taos, New Mexico at one point with Carl Jung and some other folks who were gathered in Taos, and he was deeply influenced by Jung. And this is a beautiful poem about nature, which fits in exactly with what we're talking about tonight. D.H. Lawrence says, "When we get out of the glass bottles of our ego, and when we escape like squirrels turning in the cages of our personality, and get into the forests again, we shall shiver with cold and fright. But things will happen to us so that we don't know ourselves. Cool, unlying life will rush in, and passion will make our bodies taut with power. We shall stamp our feet with new power, and old things will fall down. We shall laugh, and institutions will curl up like burnt paper." Love that poem. I love that poem. I would love to hear from you at 888-874-4888. Perhaps you have a question. Perhaps you would just like to share a little bit about how you live these days in the light of what's going on in our world, in the light of near-term extinction, the collapse of industrial civilization, how you create beauty and joy, how you offer service. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be something that you might think is rather small, but it's something that you do in your world in that way. So don't be bashful. Call us with a comment or question, 888-874-4888. And another person that I'm very fond of and wanted to read something about is the wonderful Southern novelist Flannery O'Connor. She wrote a phenomenal book called Wise Blood. And in my book, Collapsing Consciously, I quoted a section from Wise Blood, and I wrote a little commentary on it, which I'd like to share with you. Please call us. 888-874-4888. Let's get some conversation going here about how we're living, you know, in the face of our dying, in the face of the dying of many, many things around us, the dying, what appears to be the dying of our planet, the extinction of species. How are we living? So Flannery O'Connor made this wonderful quote, or this wonderful statement in Wise Blood, which I quoted. And she says, "Where you come from is gone. Where you thought you were going was never there. And where you are is no good unless you can get away from it. Where is there a place for you to be? No place. In yourself right now is all the place you've got." In the culture of industrial civilization, and this is my commentary on her quote, in the culture of industrial civilization, the individual carries the day. We pay lip service to community, but in reality, only remnants of one exist, and less so with every passing day. As we awaken to the travesty that is the old paradigm and work to create a new one, we feel the loss of community and long for the social safety nets that have been the fabric of so many Western countries, but are now in tatters. realizing the consequences of what we have lost, it is easy to become engulfed in a newfound community, if we can find one or form one, while minimizing our individual needs. For most of us, the collapse of industrial civilization will challenge us to feel our way toward a balance between individuality and community. And just parenthetically, I'll just say here, we're very fortunate if we can create some kind of community. Doesn't have to be an eco-village, but some kind of community locally or online if we have to, but locally is obviously best. So going on with my commentary on Flannery O'Connor's quote, such was the tension that haunted the psyche of American novelist Flannery O'Connor, whose novel Wise Blood was replete with characters who depicted this tension brilliantly. O'Connor's bias was on the side of individual experiences of piety and against religious dogma that facilitated a kind of groupthink. As we navigate collapse and near-term extinction, I might add, a useful motto might be, in yourself right now is all the place you've got. That's the beautiful part of what she said in Wise Blood. In yourself right now is all the place you've got. On the other hand, it may feel like community is the only place we've got. In fact, both are true. If we are fortunate enough to be held in caring community, we must cherish it dearly, yet never banish our individual needs entirely. Inside ourselves is still the only place we've got. If we're not living in community, and if we're more often alone than joined with others, then O'Connor's words are all the more timely. More importantly, the inside place, while it may be disorienting and mysterious, is the domain of the deeper self. The deeper self cannot be accessed unless we're willing to abide with the no place that we often feel when we turn our attention inward in order to access the deeper self. When we do access it, we are likely to discover that it is our true north, our home, our true place in all that was and never will be again. We have a caller, Judith, from Colorado, who wants to speak about her creativity. Go ahead, Judith.
Well, I wanted to say to you that I've certainly enjoyed listening to your comments, and thank you so much. And that's one part of my way I feel that with gratitude, that for everything. And so in March, I went to see the migration of the sandhill cranes at Monta Vista. And it was just a beautiful experience, and everything's always a surprise. There was, and that's what I love about nature, is there's always some kind of surprise if you just be there and have present to it. And also, I live in 2 acres of forest in Conifer, Colorado, and
oh, so you're my neighbor.
Yeah. And I have found these beautiful trees, a little group of trees, and now that it's spring and summer, I go out there and I drum with a drum I made myself years ago. And just like you're saying, someone used a flute, I use my drum. And it's just so beautiful. And I sit on the ground, and then I just, once I stop drumming, I just listen and watch and just be there. And that's been wonderful, that kind of being in nature and taking walks with my dogs. And I'm also a rolfer and a body worker, although I recently retired. I call it re-engagement. But so I feel like I've been in service with healing. And just today, I was with a group of people, and we were doing a shamanistic healing session with a shaman that's of the Peruvian tradition. And just how deep we went into healing and the grieving that people are holding inside. And how wonderful it was to have them, you know, come out and let it go. So So that's another thing. And I write haikus, and I do a lot of movement outdoors. And I do my movement meditation outdoors. And I also create altars inside and as well as outside. And so I think another wonderful thing that helps me a lot is to trust the people who tell the truth. It's really refreshing. And so I want to thank you and Guy McPherson, who I didn't know about until I read about you. And that it's really great that to have that, and everyone else you're helping me to understand. And so thank you.
Well, thank you, Judith. And just know that you're not retired, you're refired.
Yeah,
and
that's good.
And I absolutely love the way you're expressing your creativity, connecting with nature. If we had more time, I would love to hear what that's doing for you. But I really appreciate your calling in. And we have Larry from Pittsburgh who wants to speak about his passion. Go ahead, Larry.
Yes, Carolyn, good evening. My story is so similar to the last caller. It's amazing what I kind of woke up again maybe 8 or 9 months ago when I first began listening to the Lightboat Hour and Michael Rupert, and I just really got excited by him and just passion and everything, and it was just so intense. He was just so intense, and the ups and downs I went with him through different shows, and one night Guy McPherson was on there, and listening to him, I don't know, it was almost like I woke up again and I realized that, you know, that we are in hospice stage, and, you know, to look at life as though we're all dying, and how are you going to live your life? You know, how are you going to take care of others?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you know better, how are you going to live your life? How present are you going to be to others? You know, as you said, you know, we're terminal no matter what. You know, on a good day, we're all terminal. So,
right.
You know, how do we just take that and just, you know, really look at expand that out to everyone? And I have two dogs that I'm incredibly close with. One's 14 and a half, one's 13 and a half. And most of my life, I work out of my home, so I'm able to spend time with them. I have two cemeteries behind my house that I walk in twice a day, and I go up there and I sit and I get quiet, and I just have these incredible views looking over the west and looking over Pittsburgh. It's just fabulous views. I take pictures all the time, and I try to get quiet, and I just try to, like, just interject that quietness into the world. And the work I do, I as a minister, I conduct wedding ceremonies, and I've done in the last 20 years almost 2,000 weddings. And one of the things when people ask me what I do, and I say I help people celebrate their commitment to one another by conducting a wedding ceremony that's both meaningful and relevant to the couple. And I've tried to take that into just my life, you know, to have a meaningful and relevant relationship with each and every person I come into, you know, because I looked at the meaning of minister years ago, and it's a verb, it's an action, meaning to give care, service, and aid to. And it's something you do, not something you wear. And you can do that, I find I can do that in the most simplest of ways. Just, you know, everything I run into is my own creation, whether it's at the grocery store or at the, you know, waiting in line at somewhere, or, you know, here or there, you know, when you're out running around. And if you really pay attention and you're really present, you're going to run into situations where you're going to be able to let that light that you have within you shine forth, if that is what you so intend to do. So this show has really, really helped me so much.
And thank just, you. I really appreciate it. Go ahead.
Meeting you, Guy, and you through Michael, it's just been such a blessing. Just such a blessing that you were there and that you're taking on everything and continuing on. And I've just been so thankful to be able to listen to you every week.
Well, thanks for your comments, Larry, and thanks for what you're doing in the world. It's really beautiful. And you know what? We're all ministers, according to your definition. We're all have the capacity to create and to care for the creation. We have time for more callers. You can call us at 888-874-4888. Love to hear from you. And yes, are you still on the line, Larry? Okay. I wanted to read something as we're waiting for perhaps another caller or two. I wanted to read something that my friend Barbara here in Boulder shared with me. And it's a little comment by Thich Nhat Hanh. And, you know, sometimes people ask me, well, you know, you talk about we're all one and we're not separate. And, you know, Charles Eisenstein has written so beautifully about our connectedness, our interconnectedness, and how we are not separate. And a lot of times people say, well, what does that really mean? And this beautiful statement by Thich Nhat Hanh, which is from one of his books, Being Peace, is called A Sheet of Paper. And he says, just as a piece of paper is the fruit, the combination of many elements that can be called non-paper elements, the individual is made of non-individual elements. If you are a poet, you will see clearly that there is a cloud floating in this sheet of paper. Without a cloud, there will be no water. Without water, the trees cannot grow. Without trees, you cannot make paper. So the cloud is in here. The existence of this page is dependent on the existence of a cloud. Paper and cloud are so close. Let us think of other things like sunshine. Sunshine is very important because the forest cannot grow without sunshine. And we humans cannot grow without sunshine. So the logger needs sunshine in order to cut the tree. Therefore, you can see sunshine in this sheet of paper. And if you look more deeply with the eyes of a bodhisattva, with the eyes of a person who's really connected and serving, with the eyes of those who are awake, you see not only the cloud and the sunshine in it, but that everything is here. The wheat that became the bread for the logger to eat, the logger's father, everything is in this sheet of paper. One of the sutras, Indian sutras, tells us that you cannot point to one thing that does not have a relationship with this sheet of paper. So we say a sheet of paper is made of non-paper elements. A cloud is a non-paper element. The forest is a non-paper element. Sunshine is a non-paper element. The paper is made of all the non-paper elements to the extent that if we return the non-paper elements to their sources, the cloud to the sky, the sunshine to the sun, the logger to his father, the paper is empty. Empty of what? Empty of a separate self. It has been made by all these non-self elements, non-paper elements. And if all these non-paper elements are taken out, it is truly empty. Empty of an independent self. Empty in this sense means that the paper is full of everything, the entire cosmos. The presence of this tiny sheet of paper proves the presence of the whole cosmos. So wrap your mind and heart around that. We certainly have time here on the Lifeboat Hour for another caller or two. If you have a question, if you have a comment, something you'd like to share about how you are living passionately in the face of what we are dealing with in the world, please, by all means, call us and let us know. I would like to read something from Fyodor Dostoevsky about animals. Maybe some of you have heard this before from Dostoevsky. He says, "Love animals. God has given them the rudiments of thought and joy untroubled. Do not trouble their joy. Don't harass them. Don't deprive them of their happiness. Don't work against God's intent. Man, do not pride yourself on superiority to animals. They are without sin, and you, with your greatness, defile the earth by your appearance on it, and leave the traces of your foulness after you. Alas, it is true of almost every one of us." And my comment on this in Collapsing Consciously was, one of the most tragic victims of turbulent times is the more-than-human world. So many millions are casualties of economic collapse, extreme weather disasters, neglect, and calculated vicious abuse. Almost all pain and suffering among animals is in some way connected with humanity's pride and sense of superiority toward them. Animals have two attributes that humans have great difficulty attaining. They are totally and completely in their bodies, and they do not have egos. This makes for a creature that is thoroughly present and often able to navigate an uncertain world with a stealthy grace uncommon to humans. In grueling economic times, I believe that we must help protect the most vulnerable among us, children, the elderly, and the animals. Very difficult choices may confront us in terms of who we choose to feed or not feed in the days ahead. It may be extremely difficult or even impossible to care for all the animals we encounter. And as animal shelters and other safety net organizations are becoming increasingly rare or even becoming non-existent, the likelihood of keeping our hearts open toward the plight of animals could prove to be overwhelming. We can only do our best to act with love and compassion, and we can allow each being we encounter to be a teacher. Some of the greatest teachers on earth are our brothers and sisters from the more than human world. Open yourself to the love, wisdom, stealth, and body presence of the animals. Become a student of the creatures who navigate the world with their bodies, their senses, and their instincts. Celebrate your animal body and your soul. So one of the things that Guy talks about and I've been talking a lot about recently is doing our best to make it easy on other species. Doing our best to make it easy on other species in this time of demise. We have a couple minutes left if anyone would like to call in with just a comment or question. I so appreciate the two people who called in tonight and shared with us their creativity, their passion, how they're living our lives. You know, we tend to get real grandiose, you know, like, oh, well, I'm not doing anything really important. What I'm doing really doesn't matter. You know, I'm not leading a movement or starting an organization. But it can be just the ordinary things that we do in everyday life, just very simple things. And I would bet just about anything that everybody listening to my voice right now is doing something in their life to live passionately, to share their service and their creativity, and it may be in a very small way, or what you think is a small way, that might actually be a very big deal. I'd like to hear about it. As we think about living passionately in a time of extinction, we've had a couple of songs tonight expressing our creativity, and one of them, the second song, Tamaku and Rodrigo and Gabriela, holding that tension and anxiety and, oh, my God, what's going to happen, alongside joy and celebration and passion. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have Guy McPherson with us. And next week, we're going to have Michael Brownlee from the Local Food Shift here in Boulder, who is doing amazing things with local food. and is going to talk to us about what we are not being told about our food, which is quite a bit, actually. And we'll have an opportunity to pick his brain, ask him some questions, make some comments. Perhaps you have some local food things going on in your community that you would like to share next week. We'd like to hear about that. Michael is a real leader in local food movement, and he is working very hard here in Boulder, Colorado, as we have a lot of things that are very favorable to growing food in our state, but also increasingly things like fracking going on all around us. And activists here in Colorado are fighting very, very hard to push back against fracking, to hold the line with fracking. And there are some really amazing people who are in this struggle. And we had one of those on a few weeks ago, Nancy LaPlaca, who's an energy activist. And we're going to have more. We're going to have lots of activists in the next few weeks. We've got a really good lineup of guests. So we're going to end for tonight, and I would like you to be back with us next week when Michael is here, and 2 weeks from now when Guy is here. Thank you for calling in, and please go forth and live passionately in a time of extinction. We'll see you next week on the Lifeboat Hour. This is Carolyn Baker. Good night.
Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows.